Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Today we're going to be talking about something a little bit different, but I know you all are familiar with. What is that? Garage sales. This is a component of American life, and especially when summertime hits, my goodness, you see signs up all over the place. But having done garage sales and experienced what I call a colossal flop at doing something like that, that pretty much discouraged me from ever considering it again. It's a lot of work putting together a garage sale, and I've had many friends that have had experiences similar to mine. However, today we're going to be talking with a gentleman who is considered the garage sale millionaire. He said you can make money in a down economy with hidden finds from estate auctions to garage sales and everything in between. My guest from Colorado is Aaron LaPettis. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Donna, thank you for having me on.
This is really quite a fascinating topic. I mean, I can remember from the time I was a little girl, garage sales, boy, this is what you do whenever you have leftover stuff. You're considered one of the top collectors as well as a treasure hunter. And when it comes to garage sales, you have so much information in your book, just absolutely amazing information in your book. You put this together, I know, to empower other people, to make them aware of things. And then you worked with a man, Jeffrey D. Kern. And he also, in putting this together, you worked on this together, he has done some serious treasure hunting himself. Give us a little background on you and on Jeffrey.
Donna, we both have our interests in certain collecting. I collect presidential memorabilia, coins, comic books, mineral specimens, sports memorabilia, fine art, animation cells. So I collect a lot of things. And Jeff is a true lover of collectibles, too. He's big into Star Wars and books and movie memorabilia. And I think that's why we decided to join forces to put this great book together.
Well, you both did an absolutely awesome job. In fact, before we went on air today, you were sharing with me how the group that works with the Discovery Channel, they're flying you out to San Francisco. You're going to be doing a television show. The LA Times had a big write-up about this publication, and also you've had your own television show, and it is called Collect This, and that's been on PBS. How long have you been doing that?
I've been on PBS for the last 8 years, and my last show was about a year ago, and I had a lot of fun. It was something it's exciting when you can be on such a great station as PBS, and I was able to have my show, and that show was all about teaching people different collectibles and how to buy them and how to take care of them. And it was an exciting time for me, and I'm glad I got the opportunity to work with PBS on such a great show.
Oh, absolutely. That's wonderful, and to be on for so many years. Now, you said your very first collectible was an autographed photo by Thomas Edison, and it was given to your grandfather. And it came down to you. Tell us a little bit about that story, how your grandfather knew Thomas Edison.
My grandfather was a scientist, and he had the opportunity to work on different projects that they had the opportunity at one fleet meeting to meet Thomas Edison. And because my grandfather was ahead of this group of scientists, Thomas Edison had a liking to him, and we got this beautiful autographed photo to my grandfather, and it was just absolutely, and that's actually what kicked off my collecting, that my grandmother asked what did I want when my grandfather passed away of everything he had and what was important to me. and I asked for the photograph. And I was very, very young at the time, and my grandmother did not understand why I would want this old photo and why it had some importance. And I just, you know, I thought it was interesting that, people liked my grandfather so much. And so I asked for this photo, and that, I think, was the pinnacle of and the turning point of me starting collecting beautiful historical items.
You say in your book that anyone can do this if they really want to, but you have to have what you call a treasure hunter's stealth mentality along with curiosity. What is a treasure hunter's stealth mentality?
It is one that you are prepared to seek out any item wherever it takes you. And I will give an example. A lot of times people go to garage sales, and they, if it's not on the table, they're not looking at it. And so what I talk about that is they need to go rummage through the boxes. They need to ask the people holding the garage sales if they have anything in the garage that they don't have out. I always ask for Civil War items. I always ask for first edition books. If I don't see it, I'll ask for it. Now comes the time to, because the book's all about teaching people where else to go. You know, I talk about going to secondhand stores because a lot of times stuff is given to secondhand stores and people don't know the value. Well, you're going to get a little dirty going to secondhand stores, and it may not be in the most pretty part of the neighborhoods. But, you know, you're going because you have a feeling something's in there and you got to find it. And sometimes it's a gut feeling. Sometimes it's just something, it's your treasure hunter mentality. And you know, if people don't want to get a little dirty and they don't want to get a little hot, then maybe it's not meant for them. But the treasures that they could find will make it worthwhile at the end of the day.
It takes a real persistence and an awareness, especially of what it is you're interested in. And that's something you focus on. You don't encourage people to become pack rats, just to pick up anything and everything that they might just be enamored to get, thinking, gee whiz, this is the way it's going to be. Some people are like that, and they can't tell the junk from anything halfway decent. And we all have stuff like that around that really would not have very much value. You tell people in your book, find out what you're really interested in. You like coins. You like fine art. There's a number of things you like. Your friend who co-authored the book with you, he likes science fiction, Star Wars, Star Trek, that type of thing, and so many other items. So when you have that, that enables you to sort of narrow in on things. And I know estate sales can be absolute gold mines because so many times the people that are making evaluations of what the item should sell for really don't know what that value might be. They really don't care, because what they're trying to do is sell the items that are left over in the estate and be able to get cash for the people that have hired them to do that. But what about auctions? What about auctions? Address the estate sales and the way to work with that, because there are certain modus of operandi with certain estate sales patterns and others. What are the differences in that? I know I've asked you a bunch of questions, but toss out whatever you can.
Okay. Estate sales, and it's so important. People always ask me, how can you have a bigger, make more money at an estate sale? And, well, it's one big thing. When you hire an outside source to have an estate sale, estate auction, you know, it's almost one in the same, because you're hiring an outside source, they take a percentage of everything that's sold. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't sell, they don't get paid. And so this is where it goes into the kind of the crux of the problem. If they put a high price on items and they don't take the time to really research it, which it takes time to research all items, then you are losing money. And a lot of people, why do you think so many people line out outside a house when there's an estate sale? It's because so many things are mismarked, not properly marked, And at the end of the day, you're going to get a good deal. Now, the person having the estate sale is going to pay a premium to have those people there because you usually hire a crew to do it. And if you don't, then you're rushing around trying to figure out what things are worth, and you're just kind of eyeballing everything and saying, you know, this antique high boy is worth a couple hundred dollars. Well, that antique high boy could be worth anywhere from $10,000 to $110,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very crucial that you take, and maybe you can't hit it on the weekend you want. Maybe you have to take an extra weekend to get everything done. But that extra time is going to net you anywhere from 10 to 70% on your money by just making sure everything's priced properly.
Boy, I can relate to that. I had a very dear friend who did an estate sale of type. She did not do that, and she lost money big time. There was someone that came in to help her with the sales, and they said, you have made a big mistake because these people you've hired have underpriced everything that you've got so much. You'll be lucky if you come out with anything. And your comments are just very, very well said. Now, one of the tools that you want to have if you decide that this is something you'd like to do, and a lot of people start out doing something like this as a hobby, just like you did, just wanting to really have fun with it. I know of people that they just love to do their garage sale shopping. There's a group of gals I know, they'll get together and they just say, come on, we'll make a day of it and have breakfast out, but we have to be out there first thing in the morning. So they check all the advertisements in their local newspaper and wherever else it could possibly be posted, and they just have an absolutely wonderful day. They just really have a good time. But for someone to really make money at this, you say a computer is absolutely necessary, and you have some information about having an email account, all kinds of things. Talk about what tools people should have if they really want to get serious about this and make some good money.
Donna, first I got to say I'm very impressed because you've read my book. It seems like almost cover to cover. So I'm having to really focus on your questions because you are asking all the right questions from my book. And the way the book was laid out and what you're talking about is how I teach people how to do this as a business or as a money-making hobby. And in the first chapter, I talk about everything you need. And those are some of the things. A computer... a smartphone, you can use a smartphone. It takes a little bit longer. But this is going to be really help you access places like eBay to buy and sell, Craigslist, which is another powerful place to find items to buy and sell, Tag Sell It. You can go on to a tagsellit.com. You can go on that and find a whole bunch of garage sales all over the United States. They also actually now have a new app that you can load on your smartphone to on the fly. You can find where you type in your zip code, and you can find the local garage sales in your area. And then also, you have to track on what you spend for items. You know, if you do not know what you're spending for items, you don't know what your profit margins are, and then you don't know if you're really making money. And that's what I try to tell people. This is a money-making business, and if you lay it out well, this is something that will bring you money as part-time, as fun, or you can make it into a business, but you got to start and do the groundwork properly.
Let's talk about cash.
Talk about cash, Donna.
I mean,
I want to talk right now. I got a lot to say.
I mean, the old adage, and it is an old one. I think it's centuries old. Cash talks. Now, you say the more cash you have, the better it is. And you bring up some very good points about don't plan on using an American Express card because most people that are vendors or selling things, they don't want to bother with it. American Express has extremely high processing fees, so they'll take MasterCard or Visa or maybe a Discovery card, but your MasterCard or your Visa is going to be your optimum if they do that. But if you got cash, you can negotiate. Tell us about cash.
I think your producer right now should play a song from Pink Floyd called Money, and we hear the cash register singing in the background as we talk about this subject. You know, what I like to, when you're buying at a garage, first, all garage sales, that's all they take. They don't take a check. They don't take anything else, so you have to have cash. But say you go into a secondhand store or an antique store, an art gallery, and you're negotiating. Well, first you negotiate like you're going to have a credit card. You say, well, you know, I can't give you $1,500. I'll give you $1,250, and they go back and forth, and after it's all said and done, you should get anywhere from 10 to 25, maybe 40% off that one item. When the deal is over, when the owner of the store or the gallery director of that store thinks it's over, you then say, you know, here's my credit card. What happens if I give you cash? What kind of deal can you give me if I give you cash? And I will guarantee you and all your listeners that suddenly that price dropped anywhere from 2 to 4% of what you agreed on, because they just realized a couple things. First, cash goes right into your pocket, and you got it right there, and they don't have to wait for the money to be dumped in their account by a credit card. Second, credit card fees are anywhere from 2 to 5%. So instantly, they get hurt by that kind of money. Credit cards, there could be chargebacks and everything like that. And when you, a gallery owner, a store owner, I'm in Denver, I own an art gallery. That's what I do for a living. I always give a benefit when somebody says they have cash. And wherever you go, cash is always king and will always get the price dropped down. But you want to say it after the deal is negotiated on, because it will help add anywhere from 2 to 4% after the fact to get the deal even cheaper for you.
Very, very good tip. I was surprised about your saying that one should have a black light. That I thought, gee whiz, what are people going to think if you walk into the garage and you have this black light you turn on? Is there one small enough that just is battery operated? Explain what the value of having a black light is.
Donna, I'm going CSI on you right now. That's what we're doing. We're going CSI.
Okay, we're doing it.
So what we're talking about, and they come in as little flashlights. You can spend as cheap as $25 for a decent one. As most is like $100. They're not hugely expensive. And they're battery operated. And let me tell you the importance of this. Say you want to start, you and your friends, Donna, are out garage sailing, and somebody saw this old antique rug. Well, you don't know a lot of things about this old antique rug. First, you know it's old. Now we got to see, is has it been ruined by spills, dog urine, any other kind of things that could be on that rug? So you go in a dark place, and as soon as you hit it with the black light, things like body fluids, dog urine will glow. And different other chemicals will glow because they're not natural. And that is, if you start to see things that are not natural on a carpet, then you know there's a lot of problems with it. Because if you have dog or cat urine on a carpet, that will always lead to constant smells, and you can't have it an antique carpet professionally cleaned, because that could also ruin it. So right there, that black light just saved you from there. The black light is not over. You like a vase that you go to an estate sale or something like that, you go in a little corner or under a table, you hit it with the black light, you can actually also see if that vase has been broken and repaired, because the glue has different elements in it that it will glow.
Interesting.
So, and you know something, Donna? I'm not done. I feel like I'm on an info commercial. We're not done.
Okay, here we go, Aaron. What else have you got to share with us on the black light?
Antique paintings. In the day,
oh.
a lot of people did not sign antique paintings. It was not important. They never thought they were going to have value. They were doing it for their friends, their self, their neighbors. They knew who did this piece of art. It was Uncle Bob down the road. He was the one who painted it. I don't need to see his name. Why would he sign it? So a lot of these antique paintings were not signed. And so now come, you know, the new millennium, people want their antique paintings signed. They don't care really who they are, but having a signature on it means more money for that antique painting. Well, now a lot of antique dealers know this, so they will actually write in a name and to add value. Well, first, that's illegal. Second, most people like you and I would not know that, but if you hit it with a black light, the chemicals used in the paint today will glow. And so you will be able to tell not only is that painting, has it been repaired in today's time, or has somebody added a signature after the fact?
Every once in a while, of course, one of my favorite shows on television is the Antique Roadshow, which I know millions and millions of people enjoy it as much as I do. Uh-huh. But there's also different shows on television, you know, the pawn shop shows, and they're the guys and the gals that are out hunting in the farmer's barns that are 5,000 years old, looking for things. And one of the items that I am so intrigued with, even though I am not a biker, are motorcycles. And you say if you find an old Harley, an Indian, or a military motorcycle, even if it is in lousy condition, don't worry about it. I would think that that would just be appalling. I mean, there are some people that are pack rats that they have stuff four or five generations of their family's items, and they live out in some little hobunk town somewhere, or they could be right in the middle of Los Angeles. And you go in and you go, oh, my word, and here you find something like this, and it looks like it should be put in a junk heap. Why is this okay in this condition? What is the deal with this?
Harleys are like an American icon. Everybody knows the word Harley Davidson. And they've been around for so many years that the old ones are always considered collectible. If not for the motorcycle itself, if for the parts that are very hard to find. So they will always find their value. It is very, in my book, it's very rare that something, it still has huge value if it comes rusted or a little dinged up. Harleys, Indians, now that's something else. They're even more rare. That company, Harley, got a chance to make a lot of them before it went bankrupt. Since then, it's been bankrupt several times, but I'm talking about the original Indians back in the 50s that came on out. So all those, and then military motorcycles, these are all things that people are always looking to find for collectibles. And since there's a high demand, the value will always stay high. And everybody would love to get their hands on a super old Harley from the early turn of the century just because they're hard to find.
Amazing. So there you go, folks. But this one item really surprised me. I was absolutely shocked because I have been in various places, secondhand stores, etc., vinyl records, pre-1977. This blew my mind. I thought, nobody's going to be interested in vinyl records that are that old unless they're some kind of eccentric, but that's not the case.
You know, it's a record. First, Donna, I don't know if you know this, vinyl is coming back. There are these amazing turntables that are now considered retro to have a turntable come into your home just because the sound can't be through CDs. You can't make it sound like albums, like vinyl. So it's coming back. That's the first thing. Second, the album covers were a piece of art back in the 60s and early 70s. And that, the CDs still have not, people hung up their album covers. They would frame their album covers. You know, people were proud of that big record and the album covers. And that's what people, I'm not saying all of them, you know, a lot of the Beatles, you know, if there's some Beatles collectors out there, they'll know what the Butcher Block album cover is. And it was one that they produced, but it was considered too gory, too graphic, and they stopped producing it. And now finding that album cover is very, very hard to come by. And there's different ones besides the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, and several other great bands that came out, you know, even jazz bands and classical that came out that you just can't find. So if the record and the album are in good condition, there's a good chance there could be a value. So if you come across them, you want to do your research to see if they have value, because a lot of them, if they're in good condition, do come with value. Now, if it's just the record and no cover, good chance no value. If it's the album cover and no record, or the record is in poor condition, then there's limited value. But once again, with every fact, there is a caveat to it. So just because you find the Butcher Block album and you don't have a cover, should you throw it away? No, you should do your research and make sure that that is not one thing that has value, even though it's not together.
Well, I have to bring up one item. I've got a girlfriend. I swear she bought every single one of these when they came out, and I looked at her and I thought she was nuts. But she really thought, because she loves to collect things, and she's one of these very organized collectors. Everything has its own little tidy spot. Beanie Babies. Are they worth anything? Oh, my Lord, this woman how many did they come out with? They're still coming out with some, aren't they? I mean, gee whiz, she must have had 1,000 Beanie Babies, it seemed like. Tell us about Beanie Babies, and what are they worth today?
Donna, I get asked this so much, and people get mad at me. And all I can say is, Chapter 2, Paragraph 4, Line 3 of my book.
Gotcha.
I actually don't know if I'm that accurate on my book, but basically, Beanie Babies were made to fail. Anytime on any collectible, you make thousands and thousands of that collectible, there is no way that item can stay at a high value, because at any given time, people are going to need money and start selling it off. There's thousands of Beanie Babies. They have no value to them, you know, and obviously people are going to say, oh, he's wrong. I know I have Princess Diana, and that one is still worth about $20 or something like that. I will say most Beanie Babies have little to no value, and any time a collectible becomes a fad, like a Beanie Baby Pokemon cards or things like that, they're going to shoot up and come right back down. And I recommend to you and everybody else listening that be careful on collectibles. If they make more than several hundred of an item, can't hold its value.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. Unless you have some oddball run where they do have a very limited amount, like the machine breaks down, they were only able to make 200, then that might
Absolutely.
Be different. But when
Absolutely.
You've got tens of thousands of them out there, hoi gewiltz, you're not going to want that. You know, this has been so much fun. I really enjoyed this, Aaron, and your book is just power-packed with information. And I think you and Jeffrey just did an incredibly good job here. You've got all kinds of good tips when you go out, what to be aware of, what not to do, what not to wear, jewelry, etc. I mean, this is really a business if you're going to do it, and you have to understand how the game is played, because in many ways it is a game, and it's one that can be very profitable, but it also helps the people, if they do want to sell things, to know how to look at the value of what they have. You also make some good suggestions about get to know some antique appraisers and or antique dealers that you know are honest, and boy, I can stand behind that recommendation. There was one woman I knew for years, and she's now passed away, but I would trust her with my life. She was so honest. And by golly, she did an incredible job for us. And I just think people like that are just absolutely awesome to know. Now, you've got a website. We're just about out of time here. TheGarageSaleMillionaire.com. TheGarageSaleMillionaire.com. In your book, you also have all kinds of resources that you list, people that can be contacted for, you know, whatever reasons. I just think this is great, and I'm so thrilled for your success that you're going to be on the Discovery Channel, and you've had such wonderful write-ups. You're on a roll. Keep on chugging, Aaron. This is just terrific.
Well, Donna, thank you very much for having me on, and I'm glad you enjoyed the book. And in the book, you can get everybody can get a hold of me through my website. And I really like that for your listeners not to panic if they're short on money, because there is a way of helping themselves get some extra money by reading my book and just making it fun to help themselves out.
Absolutely. Go check out his website. No matter where you are, no matter what you've got or you don't have, if you want to become a collector, if you want to liquidate some of the things that you have, check out the Garage Sale Millionaire book. Keep it in your library. Who knows? You may be able to help a friend that has a need. This is really a wonderful resource to add to your library. It opens up all kinds of opportunities for you. More than anything else, check out his website, thegaragesalemillionaire.com. Aaron LaPettis, thank you so much for being with me today. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, call me at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And I want to let you know tomorrow we're going to be talking about monsters of the Pacific Northwest. Woo-hoo! It is really neat information. These are real live critters that we have here in the Pacific Northwest, and half of them I didn't even know existed, and I've lived here for years. Our author is going to be Michael Newton. He's a historian, a researcher, and oh my goodness, can he pull together information out of the historical hat that you would never even have known existed. So that is going to be taking place tomorrow. So tell your friends, I hope you can join me. Also, I wanted to say I'll be sharing with you after the next break, where I'm going to be doing some appearances in the Pacific Northwest, Western Washington, in fact, both on the 26th of this month, as well as the 30th, and we've got some other things coming up in August. Oh, speaking of August, I want you to know, if you would like to get a free ticket to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, I want you to get in touch with me. The tickets are going very, very quickly. I had 20, and only 11 are left, so send me an email. Send an email to Donna@DelphiInternational.com, or you can call my office directly, 253-582-5604, and I will get that ticket out to you. And this is a family pass. It's absolutely marvelous, and I'll give you more information about the upcoming event. But do get in touch with me if you would like a free ticket to that event. How would you feel if you had found you had been asleep for 4 days and ended up with third-degree burns? And you had no memory of anything? Well, let me share a story with you. This happened in 1974. The gentleman that this happened to was a garment merchant by the name of Jack Angel. November 12, 1974, he pulled his motorhome into a hotel parking lot in Georgia. And He was asleep for 4 days. Now, this motorhome, he had converted into a mobile showroom. So he was on the road doing business. He had not been able to get a room at the hotel and decided to stay in his vehicle on a sofa amid the apparel that he had on racks in his mobile showroom. When he awakened after 4 days, much of his body was covered with third-degree burns on the inside of his skin. You're not hearing me incorrectly. On the inside of his skin. His legs and back were severely burned. A hole had erupted in his chest, and his right arm was black. The clothes he was wearing and the sheets he had slept on for 4 days were not burned at all. Sound mysterious? Wait till you hear a little bit more about this. He had no pain. When he awakened 4 days after sleeping, not aware of anything that had happened to him, he left his motorhome, went into the hotel lounge, had a scotch, felt nauseous, went into their washroom, walking to the washroom, I should say, and then he passed out en route. And the next thing he knew, he was in the hospital. Now, at that time, he was in excruciating pain. He began to just perspire profusely. And they had no idea what caused this to him. He was transferred to a facility that specialized in burn injuries. But he could not figure out what happened, nor could any of the staff. So this is what he did. When he realized that he had been burned so badly, he ordered the mobile home taken apart right down to the wheelbase. They searched for faulty wiring, anything odd. Everything in that mobile was perfectly in order. Operational, fine. Nothing inside the interior of this mobile showroom had been damaged. Now, the material that was in it, all of the clothing and items that he was carrying in it, were highly flammable, but none of them had any marks of a burn. So this man and all of Jack Angel and all of the investigators were just totally befuddled. And to this day, they still do not know how he could get third-degree burns on the inside of the skin covering such a large portion of his body, yet the hair on the outside of his skin had not been burned at all. Now, he recuperated, apparently very rapidly. He underwent hypnosis 3 times, hoping that he could recapture an awareness of what happened. None of it worked. Fascinating stories, huh? I think so. How could this be? We all are aware of how severe third-degree burns are, but usually that burns everything. How can this be just under the skin and nothing else affected? A good mystery. It still has not been resolved. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Last night I was doing some work, and the television happened to be on, and I was watching one of the channels. Boy, my words just flowing together. One of the channels that has animals. That's where the channels came from. One of the channels that had animal stories on, and they were talking about seals. And there was this rescue facility down in California, and they were showing all of these beautiful seals that, I mean, they're just incredibly beautiful creatures, but how, because of waste, plastic string, fishing line, nets have entangled around many of the animals. And it was pretty grotesque, some of the things that they discovered that were killing the animals. And, of course, they rescue them, they save them. But they say we need to be very aware of things. So when I was looking at all of this, the interaction of animals with people, and then there were some other things about animals that I watched. It's fascinating, all of the stories that come out regarding the various creatures that we occupy this planet with. Well, I have in front of me this adorable photo, and it's just so precious. There's a yellow Labrador puppy whose name is Mitanni, and next to Mitanni is this baby cheetah. And I have a soft spot in my heart for cheetahs because I've had the opportunity to be around them, actually be down on the floor with a cheetah, petting it and having the privilege of getting swatted by its superiorly strong tail. But this was a story that I just thought I wanted to share it with you. This happened at Florida's Jacksonville Zoo. There was a female cheetah that gave birth to four cubs, but all of her babies died, excepting one. And she was very depressed over the death of her babies, and so she was not taking care of the one that did survive. So the zookeepers, they knew they had to take care of this baby really quickly. But cheetahs are interesting cats. They really have to have playmates. They have to have companions, siblings to be with. Otherwise, they won't live. They're just of this character personality. Well, the zookeepers at a nearby bush garden in Tampa decided they were going to help out this little four-week-old cheetah with Mitanni. Yeah, Mitanni was just a little tiny person, too. And you know what? They are best buddies. Absolutely amazing. And she said, brother, one of the people, there's a curator, Laura Witter, she said, brother cheetahs stick together in the wild. And she said, the lab and the cheetah are not a threat to each other at all. So she said, they're just working out beautifully. Now, if you're back in that part of the country, Busch Gardens is getting ready to open Cheetah Run, which is a habitat featuring all 13 of the cheetahs they have, including baby Cassie. And you'll also see this adorable yellow lab. And if you've ever been around yellow labs, you know how very, very special these dogs are. Their hearts are just as big as they are, and they are just absolutely wonderful critters. So I think this is a story that will continue to grow and expand and be told on in many, many different ways. But I couldn't, I just couldn't avoid sharing that with you. I just love it. And the photo is just absolutely priceless. This little cheetah just curled right up with this baby lab. Now, tomorrow, as I said, we're going to be talking about monsters of the Pacific Northwest with Michael Newton. And then next week, we have a very interesting array of guests. On Monday, we're going to be talking with Lou Paradise. Now, Lou is a former Marine that because of injuries that he suffered, severe nerve damage, this man decided he was going to dedicate his life to creating a solution, a healing solution for people that live with pain because he lived with himself. We're going to be talking about something that he developed called Loprasin, and we're going to be talking about that on Monday. And then on Tuesday, we're going to be talking about a very special lady, Alicia Evans, who is a dog trainer. And she has put together an absolutely wonderful item. It is a particular dog leash, and we're going to share with you all kinds of stuff. If you're having trouble training your animals, by golly, Alicia's going to have some help for you. And then we're going to be talking next Wednesday, Ken Salzman, Child of My Child. This is dedicated to all the grandparents in the world, and some wonderful, wonderful poetry we'll be sharing with you. And then, well, next Thursday, we're going to be talking about Red Eagle. Red Eagle Speaks is the title of the book. Riz Mirza is the individual that Red Eagle channels through. So we are going to be talking about that. And then a week from tomorrow, Carol Roth is going to be my guest. We're going to be discussing the entrepreneur equation. And boy, we want to support entrepreneurs as much as we possibly can. So we've got all kinds of great guests next week. And if you want to know about any of the guests coming up, there's a short write-up on them. Go into show information under the Donna Sebo Show. Tap in there, and you'll see those brief write-ups that I put together every month for your reading pleasure. And you can tell your friends about the various things that are coming up and how they, too, can tune in and listen and also participate in the Donna Sebo Show. If you like, give me a call, 888-815-9756. We're going to take a break for just a moment, and then we'll be back. I'm going to tell you a story about a woman who went through a physical experience at a very young age and proved doctors wrong. When we come back, A little bit of this, a little bit of that, and much more. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and I'm happy to give you information. And then when I'm finished, you're welcome to ask a question if you so desire. 888-815-9756. I want to let those of you who are listening that are in Western Washington to know about two programs that I'm going to be doing. One is Tuesday evening, July the 26th. This is going to be at the Progressive Spiritual Center in Lakewood, Washington. It'll start at 6:30. There's a small fee of $10 at the door. And what I'm going to be doing is presenting a workshop, sort of a mini workshop regarding intuitive development and how you can tap into your own intuitive capabilities. I'm also going to have some books for sale, also some CDs, and some handmade angels. So it's relaxing, it's informative, and I think it's going to be fun, very interactive, and I hope that you will come out for that evening's event. And then also on the 30th, Saturday the 30th, now this is going to be an all-day activity. This is going to be at the Best Western Plus River's Edge in the West Valley Highway location in Seattle. Actually, it's in the South Center area. And there are two portions to this particular day's activities. From 10 a.m. until 4:30, there's going to be vendors of all kinds. There's going to be healers, readers. I'm going to be there. I will have a table. I'll be doing many consultations and also have various items available to you. And then in the evening, now this is from 10 to 4:30. There's no fee to come in to see this activity. In the evening, there's going to be a special event. There is a fee of $35 for this. It's from 6 in the evening until 10. Now, what we're going to be doing is showing various psychic capacities. And I'm going to be a VIP speaker. There's going to be a number of other individuals there who are going to be demonstrating, and this is something I think is great because it's going to be educational as well as informative. So if you would like information, more information about this, go to my website, DelphiInternational.com. You'll see it on the events calendar, all of the details and information there. You will also find it in my newsletter. So just go to DelphiInternational.com, tap on the newsletter button, also calendar and events, whichever you prefer, and you'll find all the details and information there. So that is the 26th in Lakewood and the 30th in the Seattle-Tukwila area. So we are going to have a busy schedule this month. All right, I wanted to share the story with you about a young woman, how about 29 years of age? The last thing you would ever expect to hit you at 29 years of age is a stroke. And that's exactly what happened with this young mother. Her name is Tina, and at 29, she had an 8-month-old baby. She was astonished when, while she was at work, and she was a manager at an advertising agency, she noticed people were looking at her very, very oddly. Someone called her name. She tried to respond. She couldn't do anything. She couldn't answer them. She could not speak at all. Her boss happened to be very close by, observed this, said, call 911 immediately, which they did. However, what occurred when they got her to the emergency room, the doctor said to her, because she was fully conscious through everything, you've had a stroke. And Tina couldn't believe it. She said, how can I have a stroke? You expect people to have strokes when they're in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. That happens to older people. It doesn't happen to younger people. Wasn't in her case. Fortunately, because of her boss, and his quick action in calling for 911, medical response got her to the hospital, and they were able to give her a clot-busting drug called TPA. What they found when they examined her in ER was that she had a small hole in her heart and had never been detected before. The doctors suspected that somehow this had a relationship to the stroke, and eventually, her speech did come back, but she couldn't move her right side at all. It was totally disabled. Well, the people that were talking to Tina, the specialist, the stroke specialist, said, no, you're probably never going to have the use of your right leg again, and it's going to take really, really intense therapy to bring you back. And she was just really traumatized because this is a very independent woman. Never had to really lean on anyone else, and now her husband and parents had to feed her, bathe her, and rock her to sleep. This is hard. This is hard. So she said, it was 2 weeks after she had her stroke. She said, I'm going home. Well, the medical team weren't really excited about this. Her parents said, we'll take care of you. You come home with us, and we'll make sure everything is all right. Well, she had to go through therapy. She said it was excruciatingly painful. She was able finally to use a walker, and her baby girl would just mimic her. She would walk right along with the walker whenever she could. She would just, because she had her little baby walker, so she'd be right there with her mom. Well, it took 4 months after this stroke, and Tina was finally able to pick up her baby girl, little Ella. She really continued to work very diligently. Eventually, the walker went away, and she was able to use a cane. And she would get very distressed and very disturbed over this because she said, I'm 30 years old, and I'm walking around with a cane. She had to wear a brace over her foot. Then she was on the computer one evening, and she found an article about Bioness Ness L300. This is a device that contains electrodes that stimulate the nerves in people that have difficulties walking due to neurological damage caused by brain injury, stroke, MS. She said, let's try it. Do you know it worked? She was, within a very short period of time, she was walking cane-free, was able to move back into her own home, and it was a few months later she was back at work and also driving. She said, it's 3 years now after her stroke. She said, I've been given a second chance, and I'm so grateful for the technology that enabled me to become a whole person. We live in amazing times. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tina, I think, is an inspiration to all of us. Sometimes it takes some real unique situations to make us aware of how rich life really is. This is Donna Sebo. Have an absolutely awesome day or evening wherever you might be, and I'll talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.